Good morning. Those of you who know me know that I'm always early, and so I had this sermon already written before the events of late last week, and I did not go back and update it, but I will leave it to you to connect the dots as you see fit. When I was in high school, being a cheerleader was one of the coolest things you could hope for. I worked out, tried out, and I was selected, to my surprise, to join the varsity cheerleading squad when I was a junior. Yeah, me, a cheerleader. Short skirt, argyle socks, saddle shoes, letter sweater, megaphone, pom-poms, the whole works. By my second year on the squad, I realized I didn't really like being a cheerleader. It was a lot of work, and I didn't really care about the basketball team's success. And there were a lot of other girls who were just dying to be a cheerleader. So I resigned mid-year. Nobody does that unless they're injured or flunking out, and I was neither. I just realized that was not where I wanted to be. It was not where I belonged. It took some courage to resign. I was seen as rejecting the social code of the school, choosing not to be cool. And despite my continual longing to belong and to feel like an insider, I was giving up a clearly defined way to belong. But somehow, I just knew I'd be happier doing something else. What does it mean to belong? How do we reconcile our desire to belong and fit in with our wanting to be authentic and true to ourselves? According to a dictionary for English language learners, the word belonging is used to say that someone or something should be in a particular place or situation. And it also means, belonging means to be accepted and liked by the other people in the group. So what does that mean? That someone or something should be in a particular place or situation? How do you know where you belong? And how does the first definition relate to the second? Being accepted and liked by the other people in the group. How do we know where we belong and where we should be? And what if the other people in the group where we want to belong don't like us or accept us? I struggle with this paradox of wanting to fit in, to belong, while also wanting to be authentic and not compromise my values. That's probably why I was so taken with a 2017 book by Brené Brown called Braving the Wilderness, The Quest for True Belonging and the Courage to Stand Alone. In the book, she talks about the idea of true belonging, being seen and knowing you are where you should be, as opposed to trying to be accepted and liked in a situation where you don't belong. Brown writes about the struggles in her early life and then finally meeting her husband who truly saw her. She says, "Never underestimate the power of being seen. It's exhausting to keep working against yourself when someone truly sees you and loves you. Some days his love felt like a gift. Other days I hated his guts for it. But as I started to catch glimpses of my true self, I was filled with grief and longing. Grief for the girl who never belonged anywhere, and a longing to figure out who I was, what I liked, what I believed in, and where I wanted to go. I don't know about you, but I identified with that sentiment. I moved a lot when I was growing up. My career has been rather unconventional. I never had a hometown, and until my late 40s, no religious affiliation. I didn't belong to any tribe or professional peer group. Brown talks in her book about waiting nervously in the green room before her first interview on the Oprah Winfrey Show. As she was getting ready, her daughter texted to make sure her mom had signed a permission slip for the daughter's field trip. Brown says, "I started thinking, I need a permission slip to stop being so serious and afraid. I need permission to have fun today." So she started writing herself permission slips like permission to be excited and get goofy. She says she still writes them. It's a form of setting an intention. But she points out that just like with school, you may give your kid permission to go on a field trip, but she still has to show up and get on the bus. Brown says she realized later that those permission slips were actually an attempt to belong to herself and to nobody else, to give herself permission to be real. The struggle, then, is to show up and do the work of figuring out who we really are, and that takes courage. Being brave doesn't mean ignoring criticism or feedback. It doesn't mean you're so stuck that you can't grow or learn or evolve. I think it means that you learn what your roots are, what is essential for you to be alive and thriving, and you protect those roots. But even the most beautiful tree might benefit from a trim now and then, or need a broken branch removed. And as the tree grows, it changes shape. It might even cast some shadows where it grows and affect its surroundings. Or it might bend toward an open space where it can find more sunlight. A simple, if trivial, example relates to women and professional expectations. I worked in Washington, D.C. for 25 years. I wore suits and stockings and carried a briefcase. One day, a European colleague commented that he never saw me in bright colors. I looked really uptight or something to that effect. That day, I gave myself permission to dress the way I wanted, not the way I was expected to dress or the way my other female colleagues dressed. I bought some colorful dresses and more comfortable shoes, and I felt more like me. It was a little bit scary. I wasn't sure how unconventional I wanted to be, and I still cared about my career. I didn't know where the limits were in my organization. I knew jeans and sandals wouldn't work. I wanted to fit in that much. But I found there was room for expressing my own authentic style. On a more substantive side, for me, there have been moments when I just knew something was right or wrong. I knew where the line was between being considerate and being inauthentic. I have almost always pushed back a bit when I heard a racist or sexist comment, because it would have been wrong to let it go. And true confessions, like most of you, I'm sure, there have been some occasions when I was not courageous and did not speak up when I should have. The challenge is to find ways to respond that might help the other person understand my reaction without shutting down our relationship. It's not always about finding ways to push back, although sometimes you have to, but to help the other person understand, pushing back is not always the answer. What we need are ways to open up to the other person and open up the other person so we can have a conversation. Now, sometimes disagreements are just two people with different preferences. I might choose to have a healthy salad while my friend has a greasy burger and fries, and I don't need to turn every meal into a lesson on the benefits of a plant-based diet, unless the other person asks me to explain my choices. But if the situation is one in which someone is speaking or acting in a way that harms me or others, I am compelled to speak up. I can't be authentic and consistent with my own ethical and moral standards if I allow someone to degrade others based on race or ethnicity, for example. Now, some offensive behaviors are the result of ignorance, unawareness. And in that case, if done skillfully, our feedback could actually help the other person learn. We can never grow if we aren't open to feedback. And if the behavior is intentional and willful, then at least we have named it and drawn attention to it and hope that it has an impact. Brené Brown wrote, "Belonging is the innate human desire to be part of something larger than us. Because this yearning is so primal, we often try to acquire it by fitting in and by seeking approval, which are not only hollow substitutes for belonging, but often barriers to it. Because true belonging only happens when we present our authentic, imperfect selves to the world. Our sense of belonging can never be greater than our level of self-acceptance. Belonging to ourselves means being called to stand alone, to brave the wilderness of uncertainty, vulnerability, and criticism. We seem to have forgotten that even when we're utterly alone, we're still connected to one another by love and the human spirit." Now, I don't think we should expect perfection in ourselves or in others. We need to be gentle with ourselves when we disappoint. We need to keep talking and listening to others even when they are imperfect. To quote President Obama's recent speech, "Better is good." That's the history of progress in this country. Not perfect, better. The Civil Rights Act didn't end racism, but it made things better. Social Security didn't eliminate all poverty for seniors, but it made things better for millions of people. Do not let people tell you the fight's not worth it because you don't get everything that you want. Better is always worth fighting for. Now, Obama was talking about voting and politics and policies, but I think the sentiment applies at the personal level as well. We are imperfect. We just celebrated the Jewish High Holy Days, where we go through a ritual of atoning for our transgressions and asking for forgiveness while we forgive those who have wronged us. We need to do this for ourselves, forgive ourselves for our imperfections, nourish our roots, trim any branches or leaves that aren't healthy, and keep growing in the sunlight. We want to keep getting better. Brown talks about feeling like an outsider, never fitting in. She talks about feeling successful but alone. There is vulnerability and courage in standing on what's one's own, but she says she still wanted to feel part of something. She wanted her squad. Her husband told her, "You have a squad, but it's small and not everyone in your squad is going to agree or do the same thing. And truthfully, you hate those kind of squads anyway." So here are some ideas Brené Brown offers to help us find true belonging and to be brave in the wilderness. Number one, people are hard to hate close up, so move in. Wow, that's a challenge. But I know firsthand how it works. My daughter had a best friend in first grade, Lola Fatoyinbo. Her father was a Nigerian official at the World Bank, and he was very dark-skinned, and Lola looked similar. One day, my daughter came home and said, "Mommy, I don't like black people." I was horrified. I asked, "How can you say that? Lola's your best friend." Allison replied, "Lola's not black, she's Lola." A teachable moment. If we move in before we buy into the stereotypes, or as we say in UU world, before we engage in categorical thinking, we can get to know people as individuals in all their complexities. We still might not like someone who happens to have a different skin color or religious practice, but we don't dislike them because of that. And we might also not like people who look like us and worship like us. As we continue to be polarized, to live in communities that are homogenous, and our political segregation continues, we all suffer. Bill Bishop wrote a book called The Big Sort in 2009. He said, "We now live in a giant feedback loop, hearing our own thoughts about what's right and wrong, bounced back to us by the television shows we watch, the newspapers we read, the blogs we visit online, the sermons we hear, and the neighborhoods we live in." This separation leads to increased feelings of loneliness. And our loneliness comes largely from fear. Fear of vulnerability, of getting hurt, fear of criticism, failure, fear of conflict, fear of not measuring up. So it takes courage to admit that we are lonely and to ask for help. According to researchers quoted in Brené Brown's book, living with loneliness increases our odds of dying early by 45%, way more than smoking. Her second rule, and there are a number of others in her book, but there's not time today. Rule number two, speak truth to BS and be civil. Just because we're responding to something that isn't true, we don't need to be hostile. In fact, the more civil we are, the more likely the other person might hear us and consider our views. It doesn't mean avoiding hard discussions by saying, "Well, let's just agree to disagree." When we withdraw in order to preserve a relationship and avoid conflict, we never really learn what the other person was feeling. We might think we do, but we're making assumptions and they might be wrong. Instead, what if we could actually deepen our understanding and theirs and keep talking? To avoid a total breakdown in communication, we have to get to the underlying intention. What is the conversation really about? And ask, maybe out loud, what truly matters? Do we have some common interests and shared intent, but just express it differently and find a different path to get to the same endpoint? Or do we really disagree? Others have suggested in previous sermons and in other books that instead of preparing your defense and your next statement when someone's saying something you disagree with, try saying, "Tell me more. Help me understand why this is so important to you or why you don't agree." and then listen. Nathan was a contractor working in our house last year, and he told me with great pride that the next day he was bringing Nellie, a girl painter, to repaint the walls. I asked him if he was bringing any boy painters, and he looked puzzled. So I explained to him that unless the painter was under the age of 18, she was a woman and not a girl, and it sounded disrespectful to refer to her as a girl painter. He said he had never thought about it that way. He later told me that he became very self-conscious every time he talked about Nellie, and in the future he would just say painters without identifying their gender. I said, good idea. In the month or so that he was working in our house, we had several other conversations about gender roles and appropriate behavior in the workplace. Because I had gotten to know Nathan, I chose not to respond to his girl painter comment by calling him a sexist pig. Because he liked and felt comfortable with me, he was able to ask me questions about other workplace situations and to ask for my help in figuring out what was acceptable and what was not. I really treasured those conversations. I knew he was unwoke, but not malicious. But I also chose not to let his statements go without comment. We were able to stay friendly, even when I pushed back a little bit on his sexism, and I believe it had an impact on him. Brown says, we are complex beings who wake up every day and fight against being labeled and diminished with stereotypes and characterizations that don't reflect our fullness. Yet when we don't risk standing on our own and speaking out, when the options laid before us force us into the very categories we resist, we perpetuate our own disconnectedness and loneliness. When we're willing to risk venturing into the wilderness, or even becoming our own wilderness, we find the deepest connections to our own true selves and to what matters most. Now, you and I know that humans need connection to other humans. We join and support this and other faith-based communities because they enrich our lives. We all want to be part of something greater than ourselves. And at the same time, we know being in community can be challenging. As Linus said, I love mankind. It's the people I can't stand. And there's lots of research about the value of human connection. We know that going to a live concert or listening to live music is a different experience than sitting home alone with our MP3 player. We go to weddings in part to make a public statement in front of family and friends. I was thinking recently about Bev Connor, a beloved member who passed away last year. How many of you went to her memorial? A lot of you. We all learned so much more about her life and were inspired even more to work for justice and spread joy as she did. I really find funerals inspirational, and I try to go to them whenever I can. Bringing the community together in times of joy and sorrow is so important. This fellowship has opened its doors for communal gatherings after major national and international tragedies, and to honor and celebrate the lives of beloved members who have died. Our campus has also been the place where birthdays and weddings are celebrated, along with Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners and Passover seders. Brené Brown talks about gathering with friends after the Sandy Hook killings. She says, the day right after the shooting, we just sat together with nothing but the sound of occasional weeping cutting through the silence. Being alone in the midst of widely reported trauma, watching endless hours of 24-hour news, or reading countless articles on the internet is the quickest way for anxiety and fear to tiptoe into our hearts and plant the roots of secondary trauma. Not enough of us know how to sit in pain with others. Worst, our discomfort shows up in ways that can hurt people and reinforce our own isolation. I have started to believe that crying with strangers in person can save the world. Showing up matters. That's how we show our love for family and friends. We show up for significant events and significant issues. Think about the women's marches and previous civil rights and anti-war demonstrations. Brown says, to seek out moments of collective joy and to show up for moments of collective pain, we have to be brave. This means we have to be vulnerable. No vulnerability, no courage. We have to show up and put ourselves out there. When the singing starts and the dancing is underway, at the very least, we need to tap our toes and hum along. When the tears fall and the hard story is shared, we have to show up and stay with the pain. I am an evangelical member of this congregation because it is where I feel I truly belong. I can show up as my imperfect self and be vulnerable and still be accepted. I can share my joys and pains with you and find the support I need. I hope you all feel the same and that we can help each other to brave the wilderness and truly belong. Thank you.